Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we ask you to hold your calls for a few minutes. We're hoping very soon to have Tom Flocko on the line. And Tom lives back in Washington, D.C., and he's been attending the meetings of the 911 Commission that is investigating why we had an attack on 911, why there were no planes in the air that morning, why the doors to the roof of the World Trade Center buildings were locked so that people couldn't get up there, as they did during the first bombing back in 1993 when many of them were rescued by helicopter. But it was almost as if somebody didn't want anybody to escape this time. Oh, they said, we blocked those doors because we were afraid that people might just go up there and jump off the top of the World Trade Center buildings, and that's why we decided to keep those doors locked. And yet there'd already been one attack on the World Trade Center, and they knew, and if you go into the background of Eleanor Hill's testimony before the Joint Senate Select Committee that back in September 18th of the year 2002, that there were plans to attack the World Trade Center, and that'll be in my next newsletter, what was known ahead of time. They knew that the World Trade Center was a target for many reasons, and one of the most obvious ones was something called Operation Bojinka. This was a plan that was uncovered back in 1995 by the Philippine police. And they had arrested a man named Murad, and with him, he was a member of Al-Qaeda. He was very close to a man named Ramzi Yosef, who was the nephew of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who was the right-hand man of Osama bin Laden. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was the gentleman primarily responsible for planning 911, and he's subsequently been apprehended. But they were all meeting over in the Philippines back in 1995 with a fellow named Terry Nichols. Now you're not going to, of course, hear that. They don't dare bring this out. In fact, what they're doing now that Terry Nichols is on trial, is they're trying to tie him into some right-wing groups over here and just confuse the whole issue. Because the last thing they want you to know is that there was a tie-in between Terry Nichols and Timothy McVeigh and Al-Qaeda. Because why would they have suppressed that all these years? Well, very simply, because they didn't want you to know what was going on until it was too late, because this whole thing is long-term planning to take us into World War III. If you'd like to verify what I'm saying, one book, excellent, 1,000 Years for Revenge by Peter Lance, but there's so many other books going into the background of Operation Bojinka. Well, anyway, what they were planning, Operation Bojinka, was a plan, first of all, to hijack, put bombs on 12 jumbo jets, and they were American jumbo jets, and they were all to go down over the ocean simultaneously, and they were simply going to plant the bombs. They knew how to make them work, and this was Ramzi Yosef's plan. He was the master bomb maker who had actually planned the bombing of the first World Trade Center. He was the man behind it, and of course we let him get away. He went over to Pakistan and Baluchistan, and then of course he was in the Philippines in 1995. He eventually was arrested in Pakistan in 1996 in one of Osama bin Laden's homes. But be that as it may, the second part of Operation Bojinka was to hijack American airliners and to crash them into the World Trade Center, into the Pentagon, into the White House, the Sears Tower in Chicago, and the Transamerica building in San Francisco. The Philippine police told the FBI. The FBI knew about it. The CIA knew about it. And when we get back, I'll tell you about Bill Gertz's article that appeared 2 months before the 9/11 bombing. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. And with us today on the line is Tom Flocko. And Tom Flocko is back there in Washington, D.C., and he's keeping abreast of what's going on at the hearings, the 911 hearings. He's attending them regularly, and, of course, it reports back to us both by email and on his website, and specifically appearing on our programs to tell us what's really going on back there, because you're not getting a lot of the truth out of the newspaper articles, and there's so much conflicting information. We want to know what's really happening. So have they gotten at all into Operation Bajinka there back there, Tom?
Well, there were quite a number of revelations that came out that we've had any number of indications of prior warnings about attacks that are now actually in print. And actually, as far as I'm concerned, the star of the hearings was the staff, because basically the information that they had printed with a timeline, which I'm going to work on the next couple of days, there's any number of indications that the government was well aware of attacks.
Aware of attacks, but what about using airplanes as weapons?
Well,
and what about the World Trade Center?
Yes, those issues were brought along, and the Project Bojinka. You've got the Eiffel Tower situation. The Genoa was a very, very interesting situation.
Why don't you tell our listeners about that? Because this was when the president was going to a meeting over in Genoa, and he said, I had no idea they were going to use airplanes as missiles, but when was he over there, and what were they concerned about?
Let me tell you about what happened over there. And this was, I think, around July the 20th or thereabouts.
Of 2001, about 2 months before this September 11th attack.
And they were so concerned about planes being dive bombed into the buildings that they literally had anti-aircraft guns placed all around the building. They shut down all the airspace, and there was a heavy interest in I think the president eventually went out to sea, I think, to hold the meeting. I think they had it on a ship.
Oh, now, did the president really know about this danger that the Italians and the
Secret Service
were concerned?
Well, I'm sure he did, but he had to have, because they're these attended by a Secret Service detail, and the Secret Service detail, you know, he's going to ask questions. Why are we going out to sea? Yeah, and the thing is, last night in the press conference, he mentioned that there was, and I have it written down, it's in my notes, and I'm going to get all these quotes together and so forth, but roughly, in a rough transcript version, he said that there was a lot of evidence in Genoa, you know, and then he kind of halted and stopped himself.
Hold up this for a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Tom Flocko, and he was just commenting that the president at the president's meeting, address to the nation last night, he said, you know, if I'd had any idea that they were going to use planes to attack, you know, or words to that effect, I would have certainly done something. And then he commented on Genoa. So do you want to repeat what you just told us about Genoa for our listeners who just returned?
Well, we were talking about the G8 conference in the middle of July, about the third week of July.
All right, about almost 2 months before the 9/11 attack. So the president was over in Genoa, Italy, and what happened?
Well, the concern was so great when the Italian intelligence, the way I understood it, according to the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, had reported that a Russian federal bodyguard service had discovered some intercepts which talked about planes used as weapons flying into buildings. And so the Italians set up anti-aircraft guns all around the area where the president was going to be meeting with the other members of the G8 conference. And they also closed down all the airspace, and they closely monitored anybody coming into the airspace.
So they were concerned about planes being used as weapons, and yet Condoleezza Rice said, in May of the following year, 2002, who could ever have imagined them using airplanes as missiles and flying them into buildings? And then, of course, she also said under oath, I never remember having this mentioned during a briefing that they would use airplanes as missiles. Was she being entirely truthful, do you think?
Well, of course. Of course not. I mean, she's being evasive and protecting her president. But I think the main thing that you have to, the dichotomy between the two issues here is that the mainstream press is taking this as an issue as well. If they knew about planes, they could have done more to protect the American people.
Like maybe locking the cockpit doors, arming the pilots, putting marshals onto all the planes, even putting, as a temporary measure, members of the National Guard on the planes to guard them from hijacking. That would be the logical thing to do.
Well, this is exactly right, and one of the things that must be mentioned is this issue of the planes used as weapons. As if you have this prior knowledge of this evidence, then why did you sit there reading the Goat Book and the other issues that we have?
You're talking about the president on the morning of the attack, after he had been told that the second plane had crashed into the World Trade Center. He spent 6 minutes more reading about the goats or whatever it was.
Well, the issue is too is that the hijacking started at 8:13 in the morning, and then 8:20, 8:25. Phone bridges started where NORAD was talking to the Secret Service in the war room, and they there's this combination of communication that goes on all levels when a hijack starts. And of course, given the fact that they had all of these warnings, and when the press the evidence in the brief, if you go to 9/11commission.gov, 9-11commission.gov. Reasonably, I would say in the next 2 or 3 days, they should have a transcript up there. And
now, what would that be? I've already got all of the staff reports up through 11. Was what you're talking about in that staff report?
I think this was either 10 or 11, and 10 had an awful lot of prior knowledge warnings that the threats indications stepped up, and they had all these. It was a severe time, set your hair on fire type of threats. And all of these threats were going on in May, June, July, and August. Even as far back as April, it started up. And when you have all this indication, there's just no excuse. The first evidence, an indication, when that first plane was listed as hijacked at 13 minutes after 8 in the morning, that's 1 hour. And 4 minutes before the last plane crashed, and a good 25 to 35 minutes before the first plane crashed.
But if
they had planes in the air and still were not able to defend the country and to escort the planes or to bump them or to take evasive tactics or just shoot them down, keep them from hitting the buildings. And when you have planes in the air, there's no excuse for this. And they should have had some type of indication of warning to protect the country.
Now, what you're suggesting then is we will find the information in the staff report that is number 10 and number 11.
Yes, I believe it's 10. The first one that was read, it seems to me it was number 10.
All right, fine. So those are up on the internet right now at www.9-11commission.gov. That's 9-11commission, no space, .gov, and simply go to the staff reports and you can pull those up. Go ahead.
Well, the other thing we found too is that another issue was the fact that Attorney General
Ashcroft? Mueller. That was Robert Mueller then, at FBI
Mueller,
director.
I'm getting so many names. I've heard so many of them testify in a row. Not Ashcroft. We're talking about the DCI director. This DCI is
Tenet.
The Central Intelligence. That would be George Tenet. Tenet said that he never talked to the president. Now, this we're talking in light of all this information. He never made any type of telephone contact, he said this morning, or email contact or letter contact. Directives, nothing in the whole month of August before the attack.
Now, wait a minute. Condoleezza Rice testified under oath that the president was meeting with George Tenet on a daily basis.
That's what they said, but not in the month of August.
I see. So he was meeting a daily basis,
evasive,
but not before the attack.
That's correct. And I remember that we all of us commented, we just absolutely could not believe that the director of Central Intelligence never had a contact. He never talked on the phone. And there was no communication with him between the president and the Central Intelligence Director.
Well, I read in the paper that George Tenet said all the lights were blinking red. Did you hear something to that effect?
Yes.
And was this in August when he wasn't talking to the president?
This was pretty much in that period. There was also a mention of the fact that there was things kind of calmed down in August. The intercepts did not indicate that there was anything going on of a major proportion. It had died down, and they thought that it may have been postponed for a few months or whatever. And those were the indications. And I only read the staff report once. I underlined and highlighted and everything. And you know, I'm going to be putting a timeline up there. And the way I'm going to, on TomFlocco.com is the website, FLOCCO. And in your next segment, we can talk a little about my upcoming report the next day or so, and should be tomorrow sometime, about Sybil Edmonds. There's new news on that issue.
All right, well, why don't you just tell us about Sybil Edmonds? Okay. And for our listeners out there, Sybil was a translator. She speaks Farsi and two or three other Arabic languages, and Turkish.
Azerbaijani and also Turkish.
And she was employed shortly after 9/11 to go back and review all of the translations of the intercepts that they had before 9/11. And she found that there were all sorts of information there. The attack was coming. And, you know, when she wanted to bring this out, she was threatened. They were going to put her in prison. They were going to invoke all sorts of security laws against her. She was offered a raise and a full-time job if she would just keep quiet, and she said she wouldn't. So now she is being followed by the FBI, and everything is being done to harass her, to silence her, and this very courageous woman has come forward. And what has she said, Tom?
Just what you said. What's the next question? You got it all there.
Say what she said.
Basically, pretty much just the way you outlined it. There is a little new material, and I will also add too that she has worked with another fellow by the name of Sarshar, Sarshar, who was an elderly linguist, and she got him to testify to the Senate Judiciary Committee. They were in a secure room, and so she has testified and given a briefing to the Senate Judiciary Committee.
But they're not going to put. Are they going to put her on for the public? Or are they just going to do all this in private so we will not get the whole story?
Oh, everything's in private. As a matter of fact, I've heard there are well over 900, probably approaching 1,000 or more private interviews, and I don't even know whether any of them or all of them or some of them are under oath. They don't. They're very close-lipped about that, and they don't say very much. The president, of course, is going to testify under oath in private with in private with Dick Cheney.
He will not appear alone. He's only going to be there as long as he has Dick Cheney to back him up. Because I think George W. Bush is really afraid to appear alone. If you get him into an open conversation and he doesn't have the prep questions, he doesn't know the answers. He just should have seen last night with at least one answer, one question about, you know, have you made any serious errors? But I know when I had an opportunity to talk to him personally, and I will tell you, I as the man said, next to me said, there's a man wearing an empty suit. Well, he was asked by, in this small group I was with, you know, if you were you were the president and you were given a bill to sign, passed by Congress, but it wasn't constitutional, would you sign it? And his response was, I don't understand the question. So,
yeah.
I mean, no little wonder he insists on being there with Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney is a very brilliant man. He really is. But I feel that George knows the answers if you tell him the questions ahead of time. In fact, one of his remarks last night to one of the reporters was, gee, I wish you'd written that question out for me ahead of time. Then I could have thought of the answer for you.
Yeah.
And that is the President of the United States, ladies and gentlemen. We got real problems. And I'm certainly not a John Kerry supporter.
But we got
a choice between two people, neither one of whom who I think should be sitting in the White House.
Mr. Skull versus Mr. Bones.
Right. I think we'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Tom Flocco. And America is reaping the harvest of having turned away from God. There's no incidents in all history where a nation is turned away from God, and God has not eventually brought his wrath on that nation. People don't like to talk about God's wrath. Oh, God is only love, but you've got to read the whole Bible through, ladies and gentlemen, and America certainly has turned its back on God. Our four tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination. A two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of the American president. And then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out. And if you listen to this four-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes.
The secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tierney. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Let me tell you about the Miracle 2 soap products that we carry here, and we can't make any medical claims for them. We can only tell you that a lot of people use these products, and they tell us some amazing stories. In fact, they're so amazing, I can't really put them out over the radio. I will tell you that a lot of people tell us it helps with rashes and acne, and that they love it, and people start using these products. They just won't be without it. My wife uses the gel on just about everything imaginable, from tennis elbow to burns, and she claims it helps her. The only thing we can do is suggest that you try the products. There's a soap. There's a moisturizing soap, which I use and wouldn't be without. And, of course, I put the gel on my hair to hold it down, what little we still have. Then, of course, there's a lotion and a neutralizing solution, which many people take for heartburn or for the lower intestinal tract. All we can do is suggest you try these and see if they help you. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Tom Flocko. That's Tom Flocko, FLOCCO.com, and got a fascinating website, and he's right on the front lines of the battle. I understand that you actually talked to Sybil Edmonds not too long ago, isn't that right?
Yes, I did, and I talked to her again. Actually, it was right after the Condoleezza Rice hearing, and I asked her about the issue of espionage. which is, this is kind of new.
It was mentioned once before,
but it has not been mentioned since. And she's, her answer, she answered my question with a question. She said, why do you think John Ashcroft invoked national state secrets?
Now, this was actually covered on 60 Minutes. She was interviewed there maybe 6 months or so ago. She was working
about espionage. Did she talk about espionage then? I don't believe so.
Well, she was pointing out that there was a woman working there who was trying to recruit her to, you know, involved in illegal activity. And this woman was a spy. And so what happens? She reports it. Sybil Edmonds gets fired and the spy gets promoted. What's wrong with this story?
Well, see, that's the situation.
Why would they? This was a woman, I think, who was spying for Turkey, wasn't she?
Yes, but the Al Qaeda is active in that area,
right?
And
so
the implication is that.
And John Ashcroft threatened to send Sybil Edmonds to prison for bringing this out or going public with this story any more than she already had. So, and certainly the last thing they want is for the American people to know what were in all of these intercepts that the FBI had before 9/11. And as Sybil has said, and she can't be specific, but there was all sorts of information about, you know, an attack coming. And did she mention the target, or did she mention the use of airlines? Do you know?
Well, she mentioned planes used as weapons.
Okay.
This was in the pre-9/11 intercepts, and that's the key issue, because if we have planes used as weapons or even airplanes, suicide bombers, and this brings us to this issue of she was at the table when I talked to her. I basically said hello to her, but she was intent upon reaching Commissioner Gorelick, and I followed her up there, and there were a couple other reporters and myself standing, and she was kind of asking Gorelick to see if she could get public testimony and this other whistleblower bring some of these people out.
In other words, she wanted to testify publicly, and they wouldn't let her.
They wanted some public testimony on this issue because it was so important, and that this other fellow, the name of Behrouz Sarshar, who was the elderly gentleman, a former FBI linguist and a counterterrorism agent, he was involved with as an Iranian intelligence officer in his younger days. He fled Iran in the 80s and was on the FBI payroll for about a decade off and on. And he briefed the commission and briefed the Charles Grassley of the Judiciary Committee. And they're saying that his information is, quote, under investigation, you know. And it's just basically been kept under wraps. And he's been talking about, the way I understood it from the kind of the chitter-chatter that was going around with the family members who are in contact with Sybil all the time, that they're worried that he's going to leave the country for fear of his own safety, you know, and the safety concerns.
Well, is he afraid of the Al Qaeda, or is he afraid of the CIA?
Well, let me tell you, Sarshar had asked for immunity to testify for himself, and because in April of 2001, he told two agents that there were going to be terrorist attacks planned by the Al Qaeda to be carried out in major U.S. cities using planes and suicide operatives.
He's the source of that April report, which is included in the Senate Select Committee, Intelligence Committee. Then could we have copies of that?
Well, was he listed as the source?
Well, he wasn't listed as the source,
no,
but the one in April. They were told that there were going to be attacks using planes and hitting our buildings or hitting our cities.
Yes, and so the point is, what is happening here is that there are maybe 20, 50,000 people in the whole world who know what we just said, that, you know, who are aware of that or have any inclination to pick that up, or they'll eventually pick it up before the hearing. The idea is to keep this totally under wraps, so it doesn't affect the political vote count in November. That's the issue. If the public realizes that the president had plenty of knowledge and did nothing, and not only sat there during the attacks and did nothing after he was told about the hijackings, and then after he was told a second time by Andrew Card, because he knew about the hijackings when at 8:30 in the morning he said, yeah, I know what's going on in New York, and I'll have more to say about it later, unquote. That was 8:30 in the morning, 17 minutes before the first plane even crashed, you know. And instead of getting up out of his chair and saying, I'm not going to this thing, he got in a limousine and went to a photo op and sat there after the photo op from 8:30 till 9:30 or thereabouts and did nothing to protect the country. It didn't take over. Rumsfeld stayed in his office. Myers, the Joint Chiefs of Staff General, stayed in his office.
Hold that thought. We're out of time. We'll be back in just a moment with Tom Plockett.
Have you ever wondered what really happened at Waco? Have you ever wondered if maybe the government was not giving you the full story? Well, there is the most amazing video. It's called Waco, the Rules of Engagement, 2.5 gripping hours of the story of a government onslaught under a group of peaceable people. Now, their religion may be different than yours and mine, but they were still Christians, they still believed in the Bible, and they believed that the government would one day become their enemy and destroy them. Well, Waco, the Rules of Engagement is a video that everybody who loves freedom should see, because the ultimate conclusion is the government did not want them to come out. The government did everything they could to keep them from coming out, to antagonize them, loud music, lights all the time, to totally create a situation where they could not think clearly or would respond normally. Waco, the Rules of Engagement is currently unavailable through regular sources. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We were just talking about Eleanor Hill's testimony. You can go up on the website and try to get it, Eleanor Hill. That would be the Joint Senate Select Committee. Maybe you could find it under Google. If not, we would make it available through Radio Liberty, but have to charge you for it, maybe $10 or something. But it's fascinating testimony. This was September of last year, where all of these things were brought out. There were at least a dozen or more notifications they were going to use planes, and they were going to crash them into our buildings. This was all well known by the intelligence agencies, but of course it was never told to the American people, and certainly nothing was done. And of course, if I was the president, I would have certainly ordered the doors to the cockpit locked. That would be the simplest thing, so the hijackers couldn't get in, allowed the pilots to have weapons, put marshals on the plane or National Guard on the plane, and done the things to protect the American people. But none of these things were done, and the question is, why? And then, of course, we want to tell you about some of the other items we have. We have a great video. It's called Iraq, the Untold Story. Iraq, the Untold Story. And it goes into all the wars of the last century. It goes into the Spanish-American War, and the Boer War, and the First World War, and the Second World War, and Korea and Vietnam, the First Gulf War, and the Operation Northwood. And of course, we have with that a syllabus that has a lot of original documentation material you'll never find any other place. It's all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Order the video, Iraq, the Untold Story, or order the syllabus, Iraq, the Untold Story, or preferably get both of them together. You will have the facts, but more than that, you will have the documentation for everything we say, the fact that every one of the wars of the last century and this century have been contrived. You'll actually see the plan ahead of time. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this afternoon is Tom Flacco, who's back there in Washington, D.C., and he's monitoring the hearings, and he's going to bring you the information you're not going to get out of the media, and what you're not hearing and being allowed to hear. Tom says there maybe as many as 1,000 people have testified in secret, and secret because you're never going to know what they say. They're all done behind closed doors because they don't want the American people to know. The purpose of this investigation is not to reveal the truth, it's to conceal the truth. And right now you can see how it is sort of being used to shift the emphasis away from what happened on that morning to, well, what did Condoleezza Rice know? And did Condoleezza Rice know that they were planning on using airplanes? And so Condoleezza Rice and then, of course, Dick Clark become the subject of the issue, and they're fighting back and forth. And I don't know how many of you have read Richard Clark's book, which I have read carefully from cover to cover. It's called Against All Enemies. It's selling very well. And I will tell you, I couldn't say it was written by the CIA, but it could very well have been written by the CIA, because it makes George Tenet look so good, and the CIA just so incompetent, and there's some very good things in this book. It's worthwhile reading. But there's some things which are frankly untrue. For instance, all about the Oklahoma City bombing and the lone bomber, Timothy McVeigh. No question he was involved, but according to Timothy McVeigh, he was working for the Special Forces in a secret unit involved in illegal activities. Yeah, I wonder what he was doing. And then, of course, there is the information on the downing of TWA 800 and the phony story that all the 200 witnesses who saw the missiles going up, they were all mistaken. What they really saw was the falling fuel that suddenly ignited itself when it got down close to the ground and then began to burn upwards. That's what it was. And that's why people thought that they saw missiles, but it was really falling fuel. And if you believe that, you believe anything. Why would Dick Clark put that in that book, as well as praising George Tenet? And, well, there's a lot of good information. If you really understand what's going on, it's well worthwhile reading. And I'm not saying that it's CIA disinformation, but what I'm saying is we've changed the whole thrust of the discussion from what happened that morning, why weren't there any planes in the air, to what did the president know and when did he know it? And the president may not have known anything. The president may have just simply told George Tenet, you take care of this, and I don't want to know the details. And I believe that George Tenet and people within the intelligence agency did take care of it, because the American people did not want to go to war on the 10th of September 2001. This was the furthest thing from their minds. The average American didn't want to send our boys halfway around the world to fight terrorism. Well, we sent them halfway around the world, but not to fight terrorism. Oh, we went into Al-Qaeda, but we didn't send very many troops in, and they didn't go in to get Osama bin Laden. They went in to take over Afghanistan so we could put a pipeline through there. We put somebody, a man named Karzai, and his president, who used to work for UNICAL, and then, of course, we went to war with Iraq, which had nothing to do with terrorism. There are terrorists there now. Admittedly, they're coming in. In fact, we're recruiting more terrorists for Osama bin Laden than Osama bin Laden ever could have recruited before, because we are the crusaders coming back to occupy Islamic Holy Land. And that's the way they look at it. And whether they like it or not, we are in a quagmire, and it's a war we will never get out of. And our boys will be there indefinitely fighting and dying. So pick the story up there, Tom.
Well, what we're looking at here is an issue that can't be defended. It's been very, very difficult. And the press conference last night spent, again, there were only 15 questions asked in that hour and roughly 5 or 10 minute press conference.
Did just you notice that all of the reporters had their script written out ahead of time?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they had to submit. It was obvious that there was a good deal of a pecking order. They had literally picked the people that they wanted to ask particular questions.
But they all had a pad in their hand. They weren't asking spontaneous questions, except for the one fellow asked about what mistakes you've made, and the president's reply was, after hesitating, I wish you'd submitted that question ahead of time. I think that was a very telling remark.
We're not sure whether the press conference was scripted for the first 5, 6, 7 people, and then they let it open to different people, which I think they did, and that's where he, you know, after that, he just basically filibustered and just kept talking and talking, just history lessons and so forth, and it's pretty difficult to take. I found the only thing that came out of that, understandably, about out of the 15, I think 5 of them had to do with 9/11, and thereabouts, and maybe 6 out of them, and then maybe the other 2/3, whatever it was something like that.
But did you notice how often he said, this is about the world, we're doing this for the world? Yeah. And I didn't elect a president of the world. I elected a president of the United States who's going to defend America. Let's go to Tom, who's calling from Allentown, Pennsylvania. Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Roger.
Oh, this is Roger. Okay, Roger.
Yeah, at the risk of being ridiculously redundant, I'm afraid, but what's the time frame for closing down the hearings? At the end of this month, maybe the end of last month? What actually was on the burner there?
Well, it's July. I believe it's July 26th. The report has to be in, and then there's a 30-day cleanup period. But the physical report has to be in by July 26th, to keep it away from the August, September, and October last 90 days before the election. But the way I understand it is, and there have been numerous reports out, that the president has reserved the right to to redact, and they said they're going to go over that report page by page by page.
And they're going to censor it.
And censor it,
just
yes.
like they did with the last
and,
report.
And I'm looking here at this, and by the way, for your readers, it is Report 10. It has all the staff Report 10. It's called Threats and Responses in 2001. And it's just, what we're seeing here is that they're talking about strikes. They have a lot of quotes about a significant terrorist attack was imminent in July. Strike could occur at any time. But you'll notice that there's very little in there about planes, hijacking, weapons. Because we can't see the July 5th CIA report that came out. If we can't see it, we can't know what was in it, and things are redacted. And as a result, they have protected, because of these key reports have been kept from the public. For example, John Ashcroft said in his testimony that he never received a copy of the president's daily brief before 9/11. Never. And this is the attorney general. And I think that's, given the fact of all these different investigations, they said 70 field investigations were going on, and in the testimony yesterday, and with the FBI, and given this the set your hair on fire reports and indications of possible terrorist attacks or imminent terrorist attacks, you know, that you don't have your top people seeing the brief. And then there was something else. Ashcroft received the SEIB, which is the senior executive brief. It was I don't know what the second E was, the executive brief, and it had different words in it. And there was questioning by Richard Benveniste, who said that he wanted to know who it was made the decision as what was included and what was not included in the SEIB, as opposed to the PDB. And see, Ashcroft never saw it. Tenet never talked to the president during August, and up to 9/11, Ashcroft never saw PDB, which would have had these indications of terrorist threats. And the key, and something nobody's talking about, Stan, is that the two people, there were only four people who got to see these PDBs, and actually, Jamie Gorelick, who's in a lot of controversy now with the political shot that somebody took, that Ashcroft took at her yesterday in the hearing regarding a memo saying that she played a part in making it harder for the CIA and the FBI to communicate, like a memo to build the wall, add a few more bricks to the wall between the different organizations. And she's taken a lot of heat. House Judiciary Chairman Sensenbrenner, I was coming out of the hearings today, and the reports, a couple of reporters were saying there's stuff on the internet that she's been asked to resign. And I think I turned on Hardball on your break for a minute to see what was on. They had her on, and underneath it said, should she resign? So there's that issue, and that's basically a political issue. But what people aren't saying is Gorelick was the only commission member who had access to all 4,000-plus PDBs, along with the commission executive director, Philip Zelikow, who wrote a book with Condoleezza Rice, and who also worked for Senior Bush and in the State Department with James Baker.
Would you say
part of the Bush transition team?
Would you say that he might be a little prejudiced in favor of the administration?
Well, yeah, but that's way to catch this. Jamie Gorelick is a partner in the law firm which represents a couple Saudi terrorist financiers against the victim family lawsuit.
Well, I'm glad we have impartial commissioners.
I mean, it's just total. And those two had access to all 4,000 briefs. They get to pick which ones were important enough to show to the chairman and vice chairman, Kane and Hamilton.
Well, you know, as I listened last night, the president was saying Saddam Hussein was hiding things all the time. He was hiding things because he had something to hide. And if he had something to hide, he wouldn't have been hiding it. And I was saying to myself, why, if there's nothing to hide, is the Bush administration keeping so much secret? Why won't they release the videotapes that were taken in front of the Pentagon on the morning of 9/11? Why won't they release all these briefs? I mean, why won't they even release the names of the people that they arrested right after 9/11, the so-called 1,200 Muslims, many of them are still being held. They won't release their names because they don't want Osama bin Laden to know who they are. They won't release their names. They won't put them on trial because they don't want the terrorists to find out what we knew about them. I want to suggest we knew everything about them. We were monitoring all of these people. We have the best intelligence in the entire world, but they're trying to give the American people the idea that they're bumbling idiots. And had the American people been allowed to read Eleanor Hill's testimony on September 18, 2002, which incidentally was deleted from the Joint Select Intelligence Committee report that was put out, 900 pages, the Bush administration deleted almost half the pages and 28 pages dealing with Saudi Arabia. We have those reports.
The president's knowledge in that report, her testimony said the president's knowledge of the contents of the PDBs is classified.
Right. Hey,
could I squeeze in a follow-up quick?
Oh, no, we got one more person, but thanks so much for calling, Roger. Let's go to Ben. Ben, did you have a question?
Yes, sir. I hope this gentleman can tell me I'm wrong, but I feel that this charade of the 9/11 hearings is redundant, because I think that they're going to completely seal the records like they did the Warren Commission report till 2089, which probably increases Bush the Elder with implications there. Now, can they seal these till 2089, citing national security and executive privilege?
Now, listen, Ben, they're still sealing the records from Pearl Harbor because we don't want the Japanese to find out what we knew before the attack. Much of the information about Pearl Harbor is still classified, and the question is, if there's nothing to hide, why are they hiding it all these years later? Thank you very much, Ben.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, do you want to reply to Ben's question?
Well, I think it's a distinct possibility. All of Senior Bush's documents, Junior Bush's gubernatorial documents, were put in Senior's library to protect them from public scrutiny. So there are any number of issues that this is. Most people say it's the most secret administration in the history of the country.
But if there's nothing to conceal, if everything is open and above board, if they're not afraid the public is going to find the truth, why are they sealing all these things?
Well, because they've got something to hide. What else?
They've got something to hide, and I really think that every American should be concerned. We are involved in a war. And this war is dragging on and on. And the plans are not that our troops are going to come home. The plans are our troops are going to stay there. And that's one of the contingencies of the agreement with this puppet government that we put in place. And what I'm frightened about is what's going to happen if we really do turn over power to this Iraqi council that has no support from the public here in the middle of July or the end of June. I trembled when I think what's going to happen. What are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I have friends that say that there may not be an election, which means we better martial law with another attack or nuclear or whatever. Who knows? I think that what is really strange here is we have a 3,000 death mass murder going on here, and there's no grand jury impaneled and no career prosecutors working this thing, and that's Lacey Peterson and O.J. Simpson got a way better shake in terms of their trials than what's going on here with these 3,000 deaths. It boggles your mind to realize that so many people died, and this is not being treated as a murder case.
Well, the thing that bothers me is the fact that it's very obvious that the Saudis or people in Saudi Arabia financed much of this. Many of them were here in the United States and were allowed immediately to leave without being questioned.
It's Khalid Al-Madar, and that's we should talk about that. I mean, Khalid Al-Madar and Nawaf Al-Hazmi.
All right, who are they?
And they were two alleged hijackers who lived in the San Diego, Los Angeles area. They were allowed to come and go two or three times into the country, in and out, and there were all kinds of reports about that. And if you read this statement number 10, there's quite a bit of information there.
Living with an FBI informant?
What they didn't say here is that that the money that was used to support them was laundered through individuals, and the money came in the form of cashier's checks that were written by Prince Bandar and Princess Haifa, and the third one was the daughter of the late King Faisal. And those three are regular visitors to the Crawford Ranch in Texas, and the cashier's check came from Riggs, all the cashier's checks for a couple of years came from Riggs Bank, where Jonathan Bush is the president and CEO, the president's uncle and his father's brother. It's Uncle John Bush and the brother of Senior Bush. John Bush is his brother, and he's the CEO and president of the managing group of that particular bank And no one's even mentioning that.
And of course, the other thing that bothers me very much is that the Bush administration censored the Congressional Senate report that came out, a 950-page report, removing 28 pages dealing with Saudi Arabia's financing of Al-Qaeda.
That was in there. They said that was in the report.
Right. And so why did they censor that out? You know, why didn't they want the American people to know? Are we really going after the terrorists in Iraq? Maybe we should have gone after Saudi Arabia, who was financing Al-Qaeda and the terrorists. Since 15 of the 19 terrorists came from Saudi Arabia, the logical thing might be, if we were being logical, to say, hey, maybe Saudi Arabia is behind this whole thing. And maybe, well, why is the Bush administration covering for that?
You know, it's quite incredible that this information is not out there in the public, in the mainstream. And what you have to do is you have to fault the press, but not entirely, because the Los Angeles Times reported, they talked to sources, and the sources said that the contents of those 28 pages included the Al-Hazmi and Al-Madur and this Riggs Bank and the money laundering going back and forth. And Riggs Bank is under FinCEN, which is Financial Crimes Enforcement Network Investigation, Division of the U.S. Treasury Department. They're under investigation. That's been reported. And it's out there, but it just doesn't get picked up on any kind of mainstream where the average Joe on the street who comes home from work sees it on a soundbite in one of the cable shows at night. The news.
Well, we're going to have to let you go. We're out of time. Is that up on your webpage?
Oh, yeah. I've written about a lot of
it. Is that up, article in the LA Times?
Yeah, that was been quoted. Yeah, if you do a search look on the left-hand column, look for for research links.
TomFalco.com. Bye-bye. God bless you. Thanks for being with us, Tom.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Have you ever wondered what really happened at Waco? Have you ever wondered if maybe the government was not giving you the full story? Well, there is the most amazing video. It's called Waco, The Rules of Engagement, 2.5 ripping hours of the story of a government onslaught under a group of peaceable people. Now, their religion may be different than yours and mine, but they were still Christians, they still believed in the Bible, and they believed that the government would one day become their enemy and destroy them. Well, Waco, The Rules of Engagement is a video that everybody who loves freedom should see, because the ultimate conclusion is the government did not want them to come out. The government did everything they could to keep them from coming out, to antagonize them, loud music, lights all the time, to totally create a situation where they could not think clearly or would respond normally. Waco, The Rules of Engagement is currently unavailable. At the regular sources, call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention that we do carry the Berkey light and the Berkey, and in times that are uncertain, and believe me, these are uncertain times, most people don't realize it, but we could face a chemical or biological or nuclear attack. We're involved in World War III. Nobody wants to tell you that, but we're involved in World War III, and our current policies are doing everything they can to inflame the Islamic nations of the world against the United States. And if you really want to understand what it's about, you're going to have to get Samuel Huntington's book. We may even carry this down the line, The Clash of Civilizations, and he lays it all out. I mean, if you want to get into World War III, what you do is you go into these Islamic countries and try to force your culture on them. You get into a war there, and you're going to get all the nations against you. And then you're going to have World War III. Just exactly as Samuel Huntington advocated back in 1996 in a book which is read by all of the elite, but which the average American has never even heard of or really understands, that our policies are designed to bring about a world war. Well, that's one reason why you better make your preparations now. And one thing that we've done is we have a Berkey light water filter. And if anything happened to the water supply, we could always survive with that. You can filter pool water or a lake water or pond water. The Berkey light has the black Berkey filters, and they purify the water. They take out almost all the herbicides and pesticides and bacteria and cryptosporidium and everything, so the water comes through. It's very drinkable, tastes great, and the black Berkey filters, the only disadvantage is they have to be changed every 2 or 3 years. If you're using them regularly, you can get post filters that'll take out the fluoride, lead, and arsenic, but that is special or extra. The Berkey light costs $199. You can see it at our website. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners out across America and all across the world, because we do have listeners across the world, that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Now, if you would like to learn more about how to join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free copy of our March newsletter, which tells about what happened at the secret cabinet meetings in January and February of the year 2001, just 8 to 9 months before the 9/11 attack, why, you'll be amazed and surprised and probably as disgusted as I was when I read Paul O'Neill's book, The Price of Loyalty. And so he attended those meetings. He tells you what happened there. You've heard a lot of talk about his book, but they never tell you what it says on page 96, which was the crux of the entire book. Give us a call. We'll be glad to send you a free copy of the newsletter. You can go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And probably in about a week and a half or so, maybe 2 weeks, why, the newsletter will be up there, as are all of our newsletters. They're all posted. But you have our permission to pull them down. You have our permission to copy them. You have your permission to distribute our newsletters. And as I say, the March newsletter will be up there. Some people simply pull it down off the internet, and then they buy our things or they contribute to us. You can pull it down for nothing. That's up to you. You can listen to our programs there free of charge for 5 hours a day, with links to the American Freedom Network, to this network, to the Radio Liberty Network. You can certainly listen then to the archives when, after your 5 hours of listening to our live programs. We encourage you to tell your friends, tell others about our programs. You can listen to us on shortwave 4 hours a day. And we've quit the shortwave. We do a program now every evening from 8 to 10 here on the Pacific Coast, because many people don't have computers. And that way you can listen to us. That's 8 to 10 Pacific time, 10 to 12 Central time at 5.745 megahertz. That's 5.745 megahertz. And if you don't remember, remember our website, radioliberty.com, www.radioliberty.com. We want to mention the conspiracy conference is going to be held in Santa Clara on the Memorial Day weekend, May 29th and 30th. If you'd like to know more about the conspiracy conference, and of course, Joyce Riley will be there, and Rodney Stitz, and Len Horowitz, other people that we have on our programs, why, the telephone number is 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. Or go to their website at conspiracycon.com. Now, I'm not going to be speaking this year, but I will have a booth there, because I want to know what's going on, and I think that it should be a fascinating time. That's conspiracycon.com on Memorial Day weekend. I will be speaking in Southern California, May 5th and May 6th. If you want to know more about that, you can always give us a call. I'll be speaking then May 5th and May 6th, and I think on May 15th as well at the UROC convention in Southern California. If you'd like to come to any of those, give us a call and we'll get you the details. And then we do hope that many of you will want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or the Brotherhood of Darkness special, which is the book, the video, and the audio tape. You have to understand that behind everything going on today, our spirits are forces that want to plunge us into war, that want as much carnage and death and horror as possible. That's why we're not trying to stop the AIDS epidemic. That's why they put the thimerosal in the vaccines to destroy the minds of our children. You say nobody would be that evil. Yes, there is evil in the world, ladies and gentlemen. You must understand this is what it's all about. And if you don't understand what's going on, you're not going to be able to protect yourself and your family. You need to get our material. You need to read it. You need to study it. You need to find out what we're saying is true. Because if it is, you have an obligation to your family, to your friends. And, of course, remember, men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. So we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, for our leaders and ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.